this is particularly important because this is directly tied to your earning potential.
Yeah.
There's a major, obviously, correlation between your chosen career path and what types of earning opportunities come your way. And so that's why we're talking about it, because ultimately this is about money. This is about people being able to view their money, think about and manage their money in a really effective way that gives them more options. And if you're unwilling to see or identify other career choices, you're going to unfortunately limit your earning potential.
Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Kirsten.
And I'm Julian. Today we're talking about when your career becomes your identity.
Ooh, Lord. I know those people. And dare I say, I used to be those people.
I was about to call you out.
I mean, I had to do a lot of work to get to where I am today. So I think this should be a really good episode. Like, I personally, I don't know if you know a bunch of people like this, but I know a good amount of people whose jobs are the biggest part of their identities, like to the point where it's how they introduce themselves and even how they explain themselves. So I have this friend who is an attorney and, you know, she's generally like pretty contrarian and low-key argumentative.
I'm pretending to act as if I don't know exactly who you're talking about, but
I love her. Like, she is my friend. But every time we say something about her demeanor, she's like, well, I am a lawyer.
Yes.
Like, as if that explains it. And it's like, girl, your career is not your personality. Like, it's not a personality to begin with. But
I don't know. That's kind of debatable. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that I've met many lawyers who act or sort of behave very differently than she does. It is a persona.
Attorneys, if you're listening, prove us wrong. Leave us a 5-star review. No, but honestly, like, it's so pervasive. It's not just in, you know, high paying jobs. There was a young lady that we met at the Playing with Fire premiere who was asking about, you know, her question was, is financial independence for me?
Yes.
Do you remember the story?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So let me tell the story. And actually, I'll backtrack a little bit. For those who don't know, in 2019, we were in a documentary called Playing with Fire. And it's the first movie of its kind about the fire movement, its growing popularity, and how this one couple, Scott and Taylor Rickens, found the movement and basically decided to jump on board and join it. And basically, they moved out of their expensive home. I believe it was in Coronado, California. Beautiful home right there on the water, but very, very expensive. And after selling their home, they spent some time floating. They downsized their vehicles, which was a whole thing, which was actually one of the funnier parts of the documentary. But they basically rearranged their lives with the goals of being able to save more, invest more, and give themselves the option to retire earlier and spend more time with their daughter. Okay, so that's the backstory. As the film was being released, they were doing film screenings around the country. And because we were in the film, we hosted the screening that was here in Atlanta. And there were probably like 100 or 200 people in the theater. It was really, really great turnout. And after that, there was a Q&A session. And then we all transitioned over to a restaurant and we had a cocktails and stuff like that. And we were talking with one of the women who had recently saw the film, and she was actually like really, really motivated. But as she was talking to us and learning more, she was bobbing her head, but it kind of felt like she was, I don't know, it almost felt like she felt like defeated a little bit. Like, right. This is cool. This is great. But is this for me? We get that question all the time. And I was like, well, then who are you? And literally the first words that came out of her mouth was like, oh, well, I'm in retail. And I was like, well, and ask you what you do for a living or what your job was. I asked you who you were. And it was one of the more kind of sad, but like profound examples of how many people have sort of intertwined their career or what they do for a living with who they are, like as their identity.
And their financial identity.
Yes.
Like, I think we can all agree.
Especially the limitations that come with it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we all kind of know intuitively that who we are isn't the same as what we do. But because identity is such a fluid concept, you might find your work persona showing up at a, you know, movie about money, because that's where you deal with money. That's where your brain associates money.
Right.
So let's talk about identity first. I love the way that Seth Godin describes it. where he says identity describes not only the person we see in the mirror, it's the groups that we identify with mm-hmm. and the version of ourselves and reality that we come back to over and over again. And identity, I just think, is such a strong force in the culture that language has actually started to bend around it. Mm-hmm. So you'll hear terms like identity politics, which basically means that groups are choosing to form alliances with their chosen identities and get power from that instead of picking a traditional political party, right? So for me, it makes sense that so many people relate to the identity that they spend the most time in or with, or however you would relate to work. Yeah. And because a lot of people, like, that is where the majority of your time is spent. When you're not sleeping, you get like 2 hours with your family at dinner, 2 hours in the morning, maybe a workout. But the majority of your time, the majority of your feedback comes through work.
Yeah. Your identity in many ways becomes shaped by the environment. And if there are certain cast of characters, most likely your family or friend circle, that is going to have an influence on how you view yourself or what you believe is possible. And to be clear, I'm not exempt from this. Like, we're obviously talking about this, but I'll share my own experience, which is, you know, I think by now, well, maybe not by now. I don't want to assume everyone's listened to every episode.
All the day ones out there. Appreciate
right,
y'all.
Right. But I am originally from Brooklyn, New York City. I come from a family of Jamaicans, right? Like, I am first generation immigrant born in New York. My entire family is from Jamaica. They all immigrated here. But with that, they brought a bunch of experiences and beliefs. And so naturally, as I started thinking about a career option as I was getting out of high school, I started thinking about what I'd seen, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and what was embodied. What did my uncle do? What did my mom or my father do? And so I was very interested in the hospitality industry, which makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Jamaicans, tourism, like, that's exactly what they saw. And so there was a lot of value sort of placed on the roles and opportunities that they saw. And it was like, oh, if you go, I mean, can you imagine being the general manager of a hotel or mm-hmm. being the general manager of a restaurant? Or those are the things. And that's not to belittle any of the people that do those jobs or do any of those things. But that's a small part of what is actually available. And so naturally, that became a strong part of what I was interested in. And so mm-hmm. that is exactly what happened, except I didn't start on the service side. I started in the kitchen. I mm-hmm. loved cooking. I loved food. And I remember my mom feeling like, oh yeah, chefs are great. And chefs make a lot of money, you know? And so I was like, all right, well, great. You know, I can be a chef. Long story short, you know, as I started to grow and think about, like, you know, who I wanted to be, like, as I was in that career field, I started to realize that there was so much more than what I'd already understood. And you could argue that this is, you know, a core part of life, but ideally, I think people are learning this in their teenage years and in their lower 20s. And I was learning this like in my late 20s and like my early 30s. And so it took me a really, really long time to start to really think about what other possibilities there were out there for me and my life could actually look like. But this is particularly important because this is directly tied to your earning potential.
Yeah.
There's a major, obviously, correlation between your chosen career path and what types of earning opportunities come your way. And so that's why we're talking about it, because ultimately, this is about money. This is about people being able to view their money, think about and manage their money in a really effective way that gives them more options. And if you're unwilling to see or identify other career choices, you're going to unfortunately limit your earning potential.
Yes. And I know you talked about struggling with this and learning these lessons in your teenage years and in your 20s. But even now, in my big age of 37, like, I struggle with this as an entrepreneur. I struggle with how to introduce myself, because I've done the work and I understand that each title kind of gets a different reaction from people based on their perception of what they think that means.
Yeah.
And so if I'm sitting on the airplane and my seatmate is a chatty one, I seem to always sit next to the chatty ones.
And I appreciate it.
They want to know why I'm traveling, which eventually rolls into like what I do for a living. If I say I'm a writer, the response is, well, anything I've read, which is like a weird way to respond.
Like, I don't know.
What
do
you mean? But if I say I'm an entrepreneur, that gets a very different reaction than if I say I'm a small business owner. And if I go there and say, look, I'm an influencer or a content creator, or I own a digital marketing company, like, the conversation just never freaking ends.
Yeah, I've been there.
So I'm still struggling with it. Like, I think it's going to be this ongoing thing in my life.
Yeah. Pre-pandemic, I would have those conversations at the daycare. So I was dropping people off because, you know, everyone's sort of in and out, but every now and then you kind of hit traffic in the hallways mm-hmm. and you just end up striking up a conversation with another parent. But I will say you are also, you just happen to have much more of a friendlier face and persona than I do.
I so don't have a chatty face.
Even when we're traveling together, like, I appreciate it because it's like, oh, God, good. They've got to her. I don't have to worry about talking to the stranger for the next hour. I can just watch a movie or read a book or listen to some music or take a nap, like anything but talk to this person about whatever it is that they feel like they want to talk about. Anyway, no, I've struggled with this as with that exact same thing as well. Like, I've embraced the label or sort of identify a digital entrepreneur mm-hmm. And writer. But, you know, I can say that, especially now, because, you know, we probably should have opened with this, or maybe not. It's top of mind for us, and we're sort of dating this actual recording, but it is October 20th, and yesterday we actually submitted the final manuscript for our book, which will be available for sale, hopefully by the end of this year, if not early 2022.
But long
pre-sale.
It doesn't hit shelves until the summer of
2022. But long story short, I feel far more confident describing myself or introducing myself as a writer because we've actually sort of finally put, after 2 years of work and grinding, the final sort of edits on that book. There will likely be some more, but you get the point. Long story short, digital entrepreneur is my preferred term because it's mm-hmm. it's specific, but it's also kind of all encompassing. And, you know, they may want to drill down and say, oh, well, what kind of digital platform, or tell me more? Like, I don't know. But
yes,
digital entrepreneur is what I tend to go with.
All right, so let's jump right in. So we've already kind of covered that there's this friction that our identities create in areas of our lives, and that's kind of what we want to talk about, is how your career identity can impact your money. And I think we've already revealed this a little bit in the early conversations, but it's really twofold. There's the friction that's created by you and your perception of yourself, and then there's like managing the friction that's created by other people and their perception of your career choice. It's
yes.
like a dichotomy.
Yes, yes. I always feel like I'm picking on them, and so I'm apologizing in advance. I'm not picking on you, but I can't help but to start with like one particular profession that I believe struggles with this, at least in my life. And these are educators, teachers. Yeah. So many of the people that I know who've gone into education or academia come from a family or a long line of educators and other people in academia. Like, mm-hmm. obviously, we've talked about lawyers. You see that in certain professions too, but I think educators are one that really just hits top of mind. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I think it's beautiful to see. And you know, I think it's a natural part of just the human experience. I think about how many families and businesses, you know, are sort of tied to last names and how that sort of shapes the family tree mm-hmm. and what, you know, further generations are able to do. And so I think a lot of this is just a natural part of the process. But the problem arises when that career choice, for whatever reason, or dare I say assignment, right? Like, you've been assigned this sort of career path because of who you are as a Smith or whatever it is, isn't enough to pay the bills, right? Like, I've met so many teachers over the years that openly and frequently complain about not making enough money. They right. struggle with raising funds for their students. They can't save enough for retirement. They can't do or live the sort of life that they want to live. Mm-hmm. And yet they absolutely refuse to change professions because this is who I am. This
yeah.
is who we are.
Right.
And it literally took the pandemic for teachers who are underpaid to finally say, like, it's not worth it. And I have to put my mask on first. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even literally mean to make a pun there, but no. that is actually a perfect pun. So I was looking at this article. It's from the Brookings Institute, and it stated two things that I thought were really interesting. First was that nearly one quarter of teachers indicated a desire to leave their jobs at the end of the school year. This is as of summer 2021. And then there was another statistic in there that said that in March 2020, when the pandemic was announced, that 74% of teachers stated they expected to retire as teachers, and 16% said they didn't know. Fast forward a year later, March 2021, that number reduced from 74 to 69. And the people that were on the fence that said that they didn't know, that 16%, that number increased to 22.
Oh, wow. That's right? A big shift.
It's a huge shift. And I think it's something that's really actually a good thing. Like, I'm actually glad that teachers are standing up for themselves, being willing to say, you know what, this just isn't working, and I'm not willing to spend my entire life judging through this sort of broken system that doesn't pay me what I think is worth, because it has a downstream effect. And really what I'm committing to, you could argue, is generational poverty or generational struggle. So it's troubling, obviously, for families and students who rely on these systems. And obviously there are a lot of moving pieces
like
here.
Correct. Yeah.
Correct. Like, we're not, you know, we're not exempt from this or isolated from it at all. But I do think that if we're just sort of focusing back on the conversation here, there is a growing sort of sense of empowerment that I think this particular group of people, and I hope that other groups are reevaluating their chosen career paths or assigned career paths as well, because now is really the time to be thinking about that.
Yeah, to see that kind of shift in the numbers over a year for a career path that essentially gives you a safety net. There are some careers that give you tenure, so you're incentivized to stay longer because your retirement, you'll get a pension, you're covered. So, like, that's your incentive. So to see people opting out of those types of careers, or at least being unsure that, you know, the safety net isn't one that you can build yourself, is progress.
Yes.
But even outside of, like, those tenured careers, whether it's teaching, military, aviation, like, you know, there's all these careers that get that reward you the longer you stay. I think one of the biggest challenges when people take on an identity related to their career as the primary identity is that they treat it as if it's fixed, as if every career has the same sort of tenure, you know, component or this tenure incentive. So, like, if you're an accountant, then you are always an accountant, and you kind of strip away the creativity that comes from the skills that you have that make you a great accountant, whether it's organization, attention to detail, critical thinking, strong communication skills, and you skip over all the other opportunities and roles that you could be playing in your community or at work that could also use those skills. And that is, like, a really costly exercise, because job titles are changing, especially with artificial intelligence. And if you're only looking for roles that specifically say accountant, you're going to miss the roles for, you know, the product manager who essentially manages Ariba, which is the accounting software that a company uses. I think people with accounting backgrounds, shout out to the accountants if you're listening. I think people with accounting backgrounds.
They're probably not.
I know they're not. They're over there crunching numbers. Get off your calculators and listen. But you're just uniquely suited for driving tech innovation in companies, but treating accounting as this fixed identity prevents them from seeing where else their gifts could be used.
Yeah. Do you remember Debbie?
Yes.
I'm not going to. Okay. Yeah. We know two Debbies, but I think you know the Debbie that I'm referring to.
We only know one Debbie.
Well, we only know no.
We know
one Debbie. I'm not going to say her last name. So a little bit of, tell another story. Debbie's one of the sweetest people we've ever met. And so when we met in 2012, we were working for this company on this particular team. And I don't believe Debbie started that same time. I think she started a little shortly after that. But Debbie was a teacher. And I remember feeling really, really excited for her because, again, we've been paying attention to what so many people were saying. And we knew a lot of people who were teachers and educators, and they were struggling with paying the bills. And here we were at a high point in our careers and meeting someone who had also, like, made the courageous step to break up with that identity. And so Debbie was a teacher. I believe she was teaching, like, elementary school or something like that. But then she was brought on to our company to work as, I believe it was, like, a training and development manager for a loyalty program. Basically, there was a program that the hotels needed to implement, and Debbie was the person that everyone in all of the hotels would sort of point to. And so in a lot of ways, she was teaching because she had a student that was planted in thousands of hotels around the region. And they all sort of pointed to her, and she was able to still kind of tap into the exact same person that she was, the same skill sets that she was able to do. The only difference was she doubled her salary. Mm-hmm. Right? She had much more flexibility. She had better benefits. She just had much more upward mobility. It was just like really, really cool. And I was so happy for her. And I think even after we got to know her a little better, I was even more excited because not only was she able to double her salary, but because her schedule changed, she was actually able to lean into three things. One, I believe she made music. She was a singer. I don't know if you knew that. Mm-hmm. She also did crochet and sold products on Etsy. Mm-hmm. And she was able to just spend more time with her daughter. And so there was like this huge sort of shift in her life, like just from being willing to let go from this identity that she had done for, I think she had been working as a teacher for over 20 years.
Yes.
And then finally decided to leave, do something else. And it fundamentally changed her life. And I just wish I knew more people who were willing to make that step. And so yes. If you're inspired by that story, I'm telling you, it start with just searching. I know we're going to get into like final thoughts and takeaways there, but like, I think she's a great example of just searching outside of the comfort zone and using that as a way to fundamentally change her life and her financial trajectory.
Yes. I have a food. It makes me think of a food analogy. You know the show?
Not really.
It's not really my thing, but hear
thing.
Me out.
Okay.
Okay. You know the show Chopped? More
I've never seen the show Chopped, but I know.
What? Okay. For those that aren't familiar, Chopped is a game show where contestants get this basket of random ingredients and then they're challenged to create a unique dish. So your basket could contain cheese, eggs, truffle, and tortilla. And then one person might come up with a taco. Another person might make a pasta. And then like the last person always comes up with like some dessert dish or something. Anyway, my theory is that more people should manage their skills like a Chopped basket. If you're interested in making a pivot in your career, you should look at your existing skills as if you would look at those ingredients in the Chopped basket and get creative about all the different ways that you can assemble them into dishes. Boom. That worked.
Yeah. So I've never seen the show. I get the premise. We used to do that in culinary school. It was actually a challenge. It's called like a mystery basket.
Yeah.
But it would never be so perfectly aligned like that.
No, the ingredients would never be.
It would be something like artichokes.
Yeah, that's usually how it is. Like it would be like artichokes,
pig trotters.
Crunch.
Yeah, and like mustard.
Mustard.
You know, figure it out. And it's like, I don't know what to do with
these
things.
I'm going to crumble up the Cap'n Crunch and make a breaded artichoke.
Yeah, in 30 minutes. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, ranting here. But I think listeners and myself agree food analogies should be left to me.
Whatever.
But I will give it to you just because I love you. But I will say reinvention is my jam. Right. Like that is what.
Now you're going to make the food analogy.
I mean, bars. This
Whatever.
Is just what I do. Like, you know, that's what I do. But it's true. Reinvention is really my thing. It's something that I have done several times throughout my life. And I take that for granted. Like, I am confident that most people have not flipped the script as many times as I have. But I think it's one of the things that like has made it easy for me to pivot. It's like if I'm knocking on a door and no one's opening it, I'm flipping and I'm going to something else. Like, I have no idea what I'm going to be 5 or 10 years from now, but I have put myself in a position to explore those things without it having to have an adverse effect on our financial lives or our family's life. And I think that's, at least for me, that's what I want. That's what success looks like. But I'm not going to even lie and say that money was not a primary motivation, right? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just that I'm knocking on these doors or trying to be these things because I like those things and I want to pursue those paths. Like, money was a significant factor. I mentioned earlier that I used to cook professionally and I still love to cook, but I did not like the lifestyle. Like, as I started to think about the fact that I would have to be working every night, weekend, special occasions, like, it was like, how do you build these other things that you want to have in your life? How do you build a successful marriage or raise your children or have relationships with friends? Like, it's really, really hard to do. I'm sure some people have figured it out, but I just felt like there were other options and it was at least worthwhile me exploring them. And that's what I've done time and time again. And so it's something that I encourage other people to do. And it really requires you to reevaluate what some people call the sacred cows, those things in your life that you feel are rock solid. They're written in stone. They will never be changed. They are who you are. Like, you reach a certain point in your life where hopefully you're sort of catching and picking up on the tone of this. It's like, you know what? Maybe it's time to reevaluate those things, because doing that could open up a world of possibilities.
Yes, love it. Okay, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor, and then we'll come back, talk about one more downside to making your career an identity, as well as some takeaways and things you can do if you think this is you. All right, so we talked about the challenges that fixed identities cause, the weight of other people's perceptions about your career, and how those things can keep you stuck. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the other places where making your career your identity causes friction is when the identity is so strong that it overrides your ability to weigh information objectively. Mm. Yes. So, like, whenever you make your career an identity, it's such an aggressive filter to the world.
Yeah.
I remember doing this exercise with a life coach, and she was talking to a room of people, and she was like, raise your hand if you think that your brain filters out information on your behalf. And like a smattering of people raised their hands. I think it was more intellectual than like emotional. And she was like, all right, then for all the people who don't have your hand raised, how come you don't see your nose? And all of a sudden, like the audience went cross-eyed trying to figure out like what she meant. And she basically explained that the way that our eyes see, our noses should be an obstruction to our vision. And the reason why they're not is because your brain knows, pun intended, your brain knows that you don't need to see it all day. And the only way to override that default filtering is to literally actively try to see it and tell your brain, like, no, for real, I want to see my nose. So you can look, like, I'm imagining listeners looking at their nose right now. If you're driving, please look at the road. But it's the same with careers and identities. When you tell your brain, I am a teacher, that's all I am, it's looking around the world and only paying attention to the news, the updates, the relevant information related to teaching. And you may miss all of the other signals that are related to your other identities, like the fact that you sew or make, you know, can make handmade masks, or that you paint and there's a really cool coffee shop with a blank wall in your area. It basically just stops you from seeing all the other opportunities related to your other identities with the same level of enthusiasm.
Yeah, I like that. I'm gonna steal that the next time I'm talking to someone, and then try to snap a picture of them looking a little cross-eyed. It's like, now look at you. Look at you.
It's uncomfortable, but it works. You see your nose, right?
Yeah. No, I think that's particularly true when people have spent money on these decisions or gone so far down the path, right? So it's the idea of what's known as the sunk cost fallacy, which is an economics term that's often referred to the tendency for people to like avoid making a change or a decision because they spent what they deem to be a significant amount of time, money, or some type of resource into it, right? So they don't want to undo or discard all that work or all that money. So they really, really hold on to it. It almost makes me think of like people, like when they don't want to leave a relationship because they've already spent all this time together.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, but all we have is all this time. What movie is that?
What is that? Oh, it's Love Jones.
Oh, is it? Okay. Love Jones, is it? It is. Yeah. All we have is all this time. Yeah. You're right. Yes. Or like why someone may like hold on to like an outdated, I'm like looking at myself here, not my nose, like my literal self, like holding on to an outdated piece of equipment, you know, like a laptop, like, you know, you spend a lot of money on a laptop, you're going to ride that thing out, you know, like some people, but I would imagine most people, you know, certainly do that. Or like a car that you have, and you have people who like every week they're going to go out there and work on it. And it's like, you know, just get a new car, dude. Like you've been working on it so much. It's time to like free yourself from this environment, you know, switch it up and just, you know, just move this obstacle out of the way. But I think the same is obviously very true with careers. There's so many people because they've earned a degree, or maybe they've earned multiple degrees. Mm-hmm. They've built like the social network. They're parts of these organizations, private organizations. They moved to a certain part of town because it's near, let's say, the university or something like that. And so oftentimes they are not really willing to even consider a career change because it feels like if they do that, they're not just changing jobs. They're like throwing away years and hundreds of thousands of dollars and like relationships and membership, all of these things that are tied to their identity away. It's a really difficult decision for a lot of people. So, okay. So what are some things people can do if they see themselves in this, dare I say, identity prison.
Yes. So this first one is kind of counterintuitive, but hear me out.
Okay.
You could
it better not just be a basket of fruit and cheese and tortilla chips.
I ain't gonna make no more analogies
okay,
today.
Okay, thank you. Stay in your lane.
Okay, you could just lean into it, but differently. So a lot of strong identities out there actually use that as an organizing principle and then splinter off into these like related topics. So moms and motherhood is the most obvious one that I can think of. Very strong identity as a mother. But there are all these like subsidiary groups like Moms Against Climate Change or Moms Who Yoga, or one of my favorites who's run by my friend Chelsea Brennan, Mamas Who Talk Money, which is a money group that is specific to moms. And because these groups are full of moms who all share a filter, you know, a similar filter about how much time we have, how much energy we have, a need for connection, it feels like a safer place to learn. And so, like, it's great. Facebook groups are a great place to try and find these kind of splinter groups. But nowadays, there's also Discords and Slack channels. It really just depends on what group you're looking for. But I recommend them because it's a really great way to get feedback that isn't work.
No, I love
feedback
that.
Feedback related to another identity of yours.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think it's so important for people to have relatable or those points of, you know, similarity with other people at these particular junctures. And this is why I actually prefer like the term financial role model or financial expert, because we found even in our own experience that relatability is far more powerful in moving people to change than expertise.
Yes.
Like you always have to tap into the other part of like human nature, which is a tendency to follow after a leader has already deemed like a path is a safe one, even if it's like an unusual or an alternative path. And it's far easier for someone to envision a change in their life when they see that someone or other people that they can identify with have already done it. It's like, oh my gosh, like, there's a whole group of people that have already left where I've been. This must be safe. Like, you know, how do I be a part of this?
Yes.
Okay. What else you got?
Okay. My second tip is to treat your identity like the spectrum that it is. In other words, be like water, right?
So, Bruce Lee vibes.
Yes. I'm feeling very poetic today because there's this short poem about water that I found that it would be perfect to read. It's by Rudy Francisco, and it's really short. It says, "Have you ever noticed how much water hates to argue? How it molds itself into the shape of the pour, makes a home where it lands, but also never gives up its identity. As if to say, sure, I'll stay, but only if I can be myself. I think there is a lesson here."
Okay, Rudy.
Yes, snaps, Rudy.
I'm gonna remind you of Rudy next time you try to argue with me.
You ever notice how much like, water hates like to argue?
Why don't you just be like water?
The lesson here is that you really need to remember who you are, even when you're trying to fit in, right? And I know that's much harder than it sounds, but you can actually start this non-verbally and kind of ease your way into verbal, more direct ways of highlighting who you are. Our outer appearance signals a lot about our identity. Mm-hmm. So you can wear like a funky accessory or a pin or, you know, dye a streak of your hair blue, display a fun photo on your desk. And then once you've done those little things, you can graduate to answering what you did over the weekend honestly, right? So if you spent the weekend looking for Pokemons, say that. Like if you were studying for a certification, say that too. But just start revealing yourself in small ways and then build on that.
Yeah, no, I love that. That actually reminds me of the talk that we gave at the FinCon stage. And so we were so fortunate. FinCon is a huge conference. This year's conference, 2021, was in Austin, Texas. And we were asked to speak to a group of content creators. And our goal in our talk, it was about 10, 15 minutes. They may publish it online. It was to encourage other digital entrepreneurs and content creators in the money, personal finance world and kind of give them perspective on how to grow their reach and how to better partner with brands. And one of the things we were encouraging them to do was to share more. I think we literally said the more you share with people, the more they'll share with you. And that's something that we found, like the more vulnerable we're willing to be, the more it sort of encourages other people to be vulnerable as well. And so it's almost kind of contagious and creates this cycle of sharing. sharing. And before you know it, you're learning more about yourself and other people. And I think that really aids in people's ability to reevaluate what's available or what's possible for them.
Wow. Did we just heal the nation? I mean, we basically just taught people how to be friends and good humans to everybody.
Yeah, I'm just trying to help people reconsider their careers.
Well, thank you for coming to my TED Talk. TED, call me. All right, final thoughts. You want to go first?
I do not. I would like to give you the opportunity to go first.
All right. So my final thought is that a defining trait of progress is this willingness and ability to move beyond a fixed identity, right? Mm. So that seems like a very lofty statement. But when you think about the middle class, the reason it exists, the reason why it was created was because wage earners had this innate desire to be more than that. And so they went and they pursued education, home ownership, they relocated, they found new skills. And that hasn't changed. If you want to keep moving forward in this new tech-enabled world, you got to be willing to let go of some things. You have to be willing to change some things. I'm not telling you to not be who you are. I'm actually telling you the opposite. Like, embrace all of your identities, but also recognize which ones aren't you, like your career, and how they might be limiting your success as an individual.
I love that. I had plans on telling a story as my final thought. I feel like I've given a little too many stories, and I think that we're probably getting close to the 30-minute mark. But because you shared a poem, I'm actually going to share just a small section of a poem. It's actually by one of my favorite writers. I haven't read any of his work in a really long time, but he's a writer, and he just so happens to be a teacher. Mm. He's based out of New York City. His name is Taylor Molly. I was first introduced to him, I would say, in the early 2000s as he was performing his poem, Like Lily, Like Wilson. You can actually find a video of it either, you know, at him, like at a coffee shop or like on Deaf Poetry Jam or something like that.
I can link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, let's do that. Because I think that'll help save people a couple of steps. But one of the lines that I have always referred to, and you really did make me think of this on the spot, was there's a sign in there or a line in there where he says, changing your mind is one of the best ways of finding out whether or not you still have one.
Oof.
And I thought it was so profound. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of sort of narrative and story around it, but I fundamentally believe that. And I know that that naturally makes people uncomfortable because it's sort of, to your point about water, I think that probably makes some people feel like they're not on solid ground. It's mm-hmm. like asking yourself to sort of live in this fluid or constant state of fluidity. But you know, I could go down a long sort of rabbit hole of talking about how forceful and how strong water is as yes. well, right? So yes. I think that line, changing your mind is one of the best ways of finding out whether or not you still have one, is something that is particularly relevant for a lot of people. And I hope it's enough to inspire them to reevaluate some of their sacred cows, but more specifically, do yourself the favor of reconsidering whether or not this career is for you.
Preacher. Well, thank you all for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. Please make your first identity shift as someone who identifies as leaving us a 5-star review on the ratings and review page. We will see y'all next week.
Shameless.